Good afternoon. Wednesday, December the 19th, 2018, 13 minutes past the hour. You're tuned into the Now program, and boy, we are in the swing of the holiday season, to be sure. Christmas and New Year's right around the corner. We're almost into 2019. It is the holiday season. And last night, you'll be able to tell this during the next 2 hours, because last night we had our big Christmas party here. And boy, with the singing and the food and the fun, we had a great time. And again, we want to thank Domino's Pizza. Telephone number 740-383-3030 for supporting that great event. That's kind of become our Christmas tradition for the last 5 years. The great Leszewski family performing the sing-along and pizza at Christmas from Domino's. So I'm a little exhausted, but that is okay, because we have got a great program. And this week we've kind of been filling the show with people who we feel are like family, because it is that time of year that you spend time with family. We had Bill Macy on, Walter from the Mod series on Monday. We love Bill Macy. Yesterday we had the amazing Kreskin with his predictions for 2019. Coming up next hour, we have a dear friend of this show, Emmy Award winning actress Pat Carroll, probably best known to most children as the voice of Ursula in The Little Mermaid. And tomorrow, here's a little plug for tomorrow's show. This will put you in the Christmas spirit. We've got Joe Bonsall. Joe Bonsall is the lead singer for the Oak Ridge Boys, and the Oak Ridge Boys are touring the country right now with their Christmas show. And remember, you probably just saw the Oak Ridge Boys a couple weeks ago performing at the funeral of President George H.W. Bush. But the Oak Ridge Boys are out on their Christmas tour, and their Christmas tour Saturday night pulls back into Lima, Ohio, December 22nd at the Krause Performance Center, 7:30 start time. So we will have Joe Bonsall tomorrow on this show to talk about that. Now, aside from all that, when you're talking about predictions of the new year, when you're talking about people who feel like family, after 2 months, it is a pleasure to welcome this person back to these microphones, one of our regular visitors, and just in time, with Christmas around the corner and New Year's, we've still got Christmas parties that go on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. People still have not gotten the gift they need to get. Oh my goodness, what do you do on New Year's Eve? Who better to go to than the Queen of Helpful Hints, the legendary Heloise. Heloise, happy holidays.
Well, happy holidays to you.
It's good to hear from you.
Your Christmas party at the office was quite successful.
You know, it's an interesting thing, because originally we started out having a Christmas party and a Christmas special. And the Christmas party was always more interesting than the special. So we just put the special on the air now.
Yeah.
So it's good.
Well, with the holidays coming up, and, you know, we're getting near crunch time, if you will, that doing the best that you can with what you have is the most important thing. And what I learned from my mother, the original Heloise, is, people are going to laugh, but, you know, try not to stress yourself that if the dessert pie didn't quite turn out, or the stuffing is a little bit dry, or something or other, it's probably nobody's going to notice but you.
That is true. And something quite interesting is, as we head into the holidays, we're under 7 days now from Christmas. And we're always looking for that gift to get somebody that we don't know what to get them. And we don't want to give them a gift card.
Yeah. Well, I've always followed the advice of, again, my mother, is there are certain generic gifts, coffee mugs, maybe two nice coffee mugs and a pound of special coffee, if you know they drink coffee, or some special teas, something like that, so that it's pretty much universal. And of course, food is always welcome. Now, I am going to bring up the fruitcake.
Oh.
Let's see.
Awful.
I like it. Now, you can't eat a whole lot of it. But my dear friend, the late, great Irma Bombeck, did a column one time, and we were talking about it, that she said, oh, I think there's really only one fruitcake in the entire world, and it just keeps getting passed on and passed on and passed on.
I agree with Irma. I'll tell you, if you don't want to be invited in back next year, send them a fruitcake.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's like all things within reason. You cannot really eat a lot of fruitcake. Well, you should not. It's very rich, you know, all the little candy thingies. But a thin slice, a couple bites, particularly if it's spicy, is really nice. But if you don't like it, you don't have to eat it.
Well, that's true, but I'm not sure what you'd do with it if you don't like it. I don't. You wouldn't want to pass it on to somebody.
Well, but they may like it.
Maybe. I don't know. There's something wrong with the texture of a fruitcake, in my opinion. There's just something waxy and it's not
true.
Normal.
Yeah. It's very dense. And even though we call it fruit cake, it's really not cake like we think of. So if you think of it in those terms, then, you know, a bite or two. And give it a try. Just give it a try.
You know, Heloise, for many years I heard that giving people a candle was a good idea, but now that's a bad idea because people might not like the scent.
Well, now that's true. It depends. Some people are highly allergic, or they, like you said, they may not like the scent. But something innocuous, vanilla, you know, not highly scented. And they don't have to like it, but it's still, there are generic gifts that you can give that you're not offending anybody.
If I go to the store and on Christmas Eve, I'm one of those last-minute shoppers.
Oh, you're one of those.
Well, no, I'm not this year, but let's say I am.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know there are people out there who are.
Yes.
What should they, where should they be headed when they go in the store that day on Christmas Eve?
It depends. Generally, and this is something I learned from the people at Disney. Generally, when people walk in to a theme park or a store, unless they know where they're going, they generally go right. So if you know the store and you have in mind, okay, I'm looking for this, I'm looking for this, I'm looking for this, then you can beeline to wherever that aisle is. And you don't get distracted by a lot of other stuff. But you never know what you're going to find.
Now, what about a game? Is a game a good gift, like a board game or a trivia game?
You know, I think it depends on the recipient. There are a lot of people who play board games a lot. And if they do, then a board game is a perfect gift, even if they already have one. But also, it depends on the recipient. See, my family, we never played board games. So it's like off my radar. But yet I know many families who do regularly. They have game night. And so if you know the recipient and they have game night and they've got kids of a certain age, then a board game or something like that is perfect.
Now, I know for many, many, many years, the traditional gift, if you went to somebody's house, was a box of chocolates.
Yes.
But they were never good. You know, I remember when people would give you these chocolates, and they were all different flavored.
Yeah.
And like two you liked. So there were about 45 you didn't.
Yes.
People have gotten away from that.
Well, you know, I think during Valentine's, it's still standard, quite acceptable. During the holidays, if you give someone a box of chocolates, they can then use it, set it out. Maybe they're entertaining 2 days later. It's going to go to good use.
What about oranges? Oranges used to be a part of Christmas.
Ironically, I just was in my main office, and Norma, who does our Wednesday column, which is food-related, I walked in and I said, okay, let's do a column on. We have tangerines, tangelos, which I can never pronounce, and oranges. And see, those are the kind of fruits, and those will last quite some time, too, either refrigerated or sitting out, depending on the temperature of your kitchen. And if nothing else, you can use it as a decoration. Like when we entertain occasionally, we used to entertain a lot, is I didn't have time to go buy flowers, and I would go out in my yard with my butcher knife and cut off some greens from a tree, from a palm tree, that kind of thing, and then have a beautiful large crystal bowl filled with apples and oranges.
That's good, and that's also healthy.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, usually it's like the day after, either the day after Thanksgiving, and depending on when you eat your Christmas meal, you know, some do it on the 24th the night before, some do it on the 25th, but usually by the 26th or the 27th, you're pretty tired of leftover turkey and dressing.
Oh, I agree. Well, it also brings up another interesting thing that goes with Christmas hand in hand, and that is eggnog. And there is a person here at the station who has younger kids. And I guess at the beginning of the Christmas season, the young kids came to her and said, we would like you to make homemade eggnog this year. So she's going to attempt this on Christmas Eve. And I told her, I said, if you've never made it, I don't think you should be making it on Christmas Eve.
Correct.
Because you could spend Christmas Eve in the emergency room.
Well, and that's true. That depending on if it's really homemade, you have to know about the eggs. But they do have pasteurized liquid eggs that you can use. But if the children, what I would suggest is if the children are really young, or you've got someone in your household who is elderly or has a suppressed immune system, I wouldn't serve them eggnog.
Now, is there a good eggnog recipe?
Well, I think there's one in my book. I don't have my book in front of me.
No, people could look it up, though.
Well, if you're going to go on the internet and do it, I would go to either the Egg Council, Dairy Council, something like that, Good Housekeeping Magazine, you know, where there's, and those are the recipes that have truly been tested and are safe. And see, I used to make, for me, I hate to call it a diet eggnog, but I would make my own. The real thing that's, you know, heavy cream and milk and all that, and I would do mine with skim milk and cut back on the calories. Now, if you do that like I did, you bump up the spices. You make the spices a little bit stronger.
You know, interestingly enough, Heloise, do you ever watch that CBS Sunday morning show with Jane Pauley?
Well, as a matter of fact, yes, and Jane has been a friend of mine for over 30 years.
Oh, Jane is wonderful. Tell her here in the Midwest, which she's from Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
We love Jane. Jane's a wonderful host of that show. But last week on the show, did you catch the piece about Virginia O'Hanlon's relatives, the Yes, Virginia, There Is a Santa Claus letter?
No.
Well, last week, I didn't see it either, but somebody told me about it, that they had her grandson and great-grandson on, and that they have the original letter that their grandmother got.
Wow.
And they won't sell it, and they've been offered a lot of money to sell this. Now, for people who don't know what this is, in 1897, a little 8-year-old girl named Virginia O'Hanlon wrote a newspaper. She wrote the Sun. It was a New York Sun, asking if there was a Santa Claus. And the editor replied in the paper, and it's become a very famous letter.
Yes.
Plays, movies, the whole bit. So I'm watching, or I'm hearing about this show. And here's what I've decided I'm going to do this year. Since I know where the real letter is, I'm going to reproduce the letter and frame it and put it, you know, kind of old it up a little bit with tea bags or something mm-hmm. like that. And then I'm going to give it to somebody and tell them it's the original letter.
No, you can't do that.
No, people will never know.
Yes, they will.
They'll think they've got a real piece of history up on their wall.
Well, if you simply say it's a reproduction, then, yeah, cause you don't want to hoodwink somebody having them think it's the real thing, because if they think it's the real thing, they may turn around and try to sell it and find out it's not.
Yeah, but I think that ends good for me either way, because if they come back to me and say, I tried to sell your Christmas gift, I'm going to say, well, serves you right.
Well, that's one way to look at it. Yes, it is.
See, isn't that the holidays? That to me, is the holidays in introspect, because I don't know that people, everybody always says this, the holidays aren't the same as they used to be. You know, I don't know if that's true. I've come to the conclusion that when you're a child, the holidays are different.
Yes.
Yeah. And it just changes as you get older.
And also, remember, I was a mathematics and business double major, and there's a mathematical equation. So if you're 5 years old, waiting for Christmas or Hanukkah or New Year's, okay, that's 1/5 of your life. But when you're 10 or 20, it's 1/20 of your life. So how many times do you hear adults say, Christmas is already here? Didn't we just have it? You know, so for children, it's exciting. In fact, when my husband's son lived with us, I mean, I used to do Christmas really big. He was 13 or 14. He still remembers it. I'm famous for it. Every time he would say, are you making your pumpkin bread? So, and creating your own traditions is also important, too. When my husband and I got married, and I said, David, you know, something or other, and my mother had already passed on, and he said, we'll create our own traditions. And I thought, okay, he's right. So one of ours is I make pumpkin bread. I put on all the old-fashioned Christmas carols, and as long as there's no one here with allergies, you know, I light the candles. And those are the things to remember, too, is that when it comes to a holiday entertaining or your family, it's sight, sound, and scent. So as soon as they walk in the door, whether it's the front door, the garage door, the kitchen door, if you smell cinnamon or nutmeg, it sets the tone. So even if you aren't baking, here's the hints from Heloise, cheaty one, is you put a pan of water on the stove, and you just sprinkle cinnamon in it. And the house, and you can put oranges in it, cut up some oranges, and maybe sprinkle a little cloves, and the house smells like Christmas.
So you just boil the orange peels?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And add some cinnamon or allspice, just a little bit, and then you put it on simmer. And up where you all live, too, remember I'm in San Antonio, Texas, and it gets very dry. Well, it also adds moisture to the house.
Now, if you're having guests over, because on Christmas Eve I have guests over, what is it, because I don't want to do the turkey and all that, because we just did that a month ago. Mm-hmm. What's a good thing to serve on Christmas for dinner and dessert?
Well, you know, one of the traditional ones is ham. But one of the best holidays that we had is, I was like you. I was like, you know, we just did Thanksgiving. Couldn't the pilgrims have done this in, like, June? So I did what we call, or I call it, South Texas Ranch Breakfast or Brunch. You know, eggs, potatoes, sheepherder's potatoes, and then sliced tomatoes, and it's a little untraditional, but it's a nice change.
You know what I did last year, and it turned out very well, because people loved them, and they ate multiples. I mean, I think it went over bigger than the turkey did on Thanksgiving, was on Christmas Eve, we did shredded chicken sandwiches.
There you go.
And it was very popular.
It doesn't hurt to, as they say, step out of the box, as long as it's something you know your guests are going to enjoy and going to like. It doesn't have to necessarily be traditional.
I think that's true. And I'm not even really sure, as time goes by, what exactly is a traditional Christmas.
Well, you know, a lot of that depends on what part of the country you live in. Remember, my column is national, and a lot of it depends on what part of the country you live in. Like up in New England, their dressing or stuffing has, I think, it's oysters in it, which here in Texas is like, what? And so if you live along the coastline, your meal may include fish or shrimp or crab. So depending on where you live, and also it's what your family has done, what may be traditional in my family may not be from someone from the Midwest or New Jersey or Seattle. See, when you think of Seattle, you think of, at least I do, a lot of seafood, things like that. So that's traditional for them. And what you can really do if it's family is have what we call, you know, the family meeting and say, okay, we're planning the meal, and is there anything, and here's what I learned, is there anything you don't like, and what do you like? And there's a difference there. And when it comes to cleanup, there was a piece in, I think it was Good Housekeeping, years ago, and they asked, it was like 8 different grandmothers about the cleanup and who does this. And the one that was brilliant, she said, oh, I never assign a chore. I ask them, what is it you want to do? There's some people who don't mind being in the kitchen, washing dishes, scrubbing pots and pans, other people who don't mind sweeping off the vestibule, that kind of thing. So pick the job or the chore that you don't mind doing.
You know, it's interesting. What was just going through my mind there was, there are 3 things that in my mind are heavily associated with Christmas. For one reason or another, and they're all food items, yet in the last maybe 20 years, I have not seen any of these things used. And one is the one we just talked about, the oranges, mm-hmm. but also gumdrops and mm-hmm. also marshmallows because of that Darlene Love song, Marshmallow Christmas. And I mean, can you do something besides sweet potatoes and hot chocolate with marshmallows?
Oh, absolutely. And, I mean, that's one of the things I think of, particularly here in Texas, is, you know, pumpkin pie or sweet potato pie. And, of course, here, Texas being the pecan capital of, as I jokingly say, pecan pie. And so... And I always try, or used to try, to provide a little bit of a variety so that if someone didn't care for pecan pie because it was too sweet, maybe they were diabetic, maybe they're on a special diet. So when I would do buffets, and this is a really good hint, I would take a card, fold it in half, and write on it, you know, pecan pie. Or sweet potato pie, so people don't have to guess.
That's good, because they do look very similar.
Very much so.
But they taste a lot different.
I'm not sure if that's so. In fact, we just did a column on the difference between a yam. Remember, candied yams. See, now, I've never been a fan of that, if I'm eating that kind of thing. But... And always, I always try to provide a healthy alternative, and I can make a big fruit salad. You know, cut up the apples very small, everything is bite size, and so the apples don't turn, you know how they brown, is I would take about a quarter cup of orange juice, dilute it a little bit. Pour it over the fruit, and you toss it, and that prevents the apples from browning.
Mm. Sounds good.
It is. It is. And then I'm a great fan of a touch of, again, cinnamon sugar, something or other, to give it that little kick.
What about if you're coming to somebody's house... What is the rule when it comes to alcohol and poinsettias?
Well, okay, alcohol, it depends, but you always want to provide an alternative. Sparkling water, maybe a punch that has no alcohol in it, and again, put a note on it, and that the poinsettias, in fact, are not poisonous.
Really?
You don't want to eat it, but because I did a huge piece working with the American Veterinary Association and got all the way to the top, and he said, you know, that's been around forever and ever and ever and ever. Now, it depends on the size of the dog or the cat. If you've got a 2-pound chihuahua and they eat a lot, they're probably going to get an upset stomach. If you've got a 50-pound Great Dane, it's not going to bother them. But you still don't want to take a chance.
Now, what is the rule, because we all think about this after the holiday, when Christmas is over and New Year's is over, how do you plant the poinsettia to make it continue?
I've always had luck just leaving it in the pot.
Do you have to water it?
You do. There's this, you have to water it. And then at a certain time of year, you put it in a closet, and it goes dark, and then you bring it out. But I've always just kept them in the pot and have a beautiful green plant.
What's your feeling on the fake poinsettias they sell?
I'm all for them. I'm all for them. You don't have to worry about watering them. They look so real. In fact, one year... before we had the fence and the gates up, is I went out, and I still have them in the garage, those poinsettias, and I attached them to some shrubbery that we had, and people were stopping and saying, hey, is that a poinsettia on your shrubs?
That's a nice touch.
Well, yeah. Yeah. And you don't have to worry about, or I would, the two pots that are out front of our gate, and I try to change them out, you know, fall, during the holiday season and everything. And I had a bunch of those, and I just stuck them in the dirt, and they looked real. And if it rains or snows, well, it very rarely snows here, but if it rains or snows, it's not going to affect them.
Now, if I do get the real poinsettia, at what point do I put it in the closet and stop watering it?
I would have to go back and look at the research, because there's a point that you put it in the closet, and it's supposed to say, I don't know whether it goes dormant or something or other, and then you bring it out, and it needs sunlight and everything, and then it'll start blooming.
Now, if somebody brings me one during this season, do I set it in front of the light, and is it best to water in the morning or at night, and how much water?
The kind of rule of thumb is, and usually the instructions are there, but I kind of, it's like the way I cook and do spices. I don't really measure that much, but if you stick your finger down in the soil and it feels dry, then it's time to water it. If you put your finger down in the soil and it's still moist, then you don't need to water it maybe for a couple days. And it depends on the environment. If your house is heated, it's going to dry out sooner. See, where we are, we don't use that much heat generally. But so it'll last longer. You won't have to water it quite as much. And the really kind of funky way to water it is to take a handful of ice cubes and just place it around the soil. They'll melt slowly and water the plant, meaning you're not going to flood it.
Well, see, that's fascinating. And back to the food part of this, what's a good thing to do with candy canes that you could involve with your guests? Can you use them as garnish or something?
Well, I tell you what's really nice is if you're serving hot chocolate or even coffee, is put a candy cane in there. And it acts like a little stir, but it adds that little peppermint taste to it. You can crush them up and use them if you're making a beautiful cake or a Texas sheet cake or something, is mix it in with the icing, and it gives it, now you want to be sure to crush them you know, pretty fine, because you don't want somebody biting down on a big chunk.
That's true. They could end up in the same emergency room with the eggnog people.
Scott, you just seem to be fascinated with the ER during the holiday season.
Well, I don't want to end up there. So
well,
I think.
True.
So, you know, have you ever noticed when you say something enough times, it doesn't happen?
No, I can't say I have.
No, I find that fascinating because, see, if I do end up in the ER on Christmas Eve, then I'll say, well, I told you so. But I don't think I'll get that up. It's like the letter thing, you know?
Yeah.
You kind of cover yourself.
Well, and truly, again, keeping in mind if you've got young children or someone in your household who, you know, is elderly, has a sensitive digestive system, suppressed immune system, you really want to use caution about what they eat.
Now, peppermint is also a good sedative for the stomach.
Yes, it is. It is.
So if your eggnog happens to go bad, the candy cane might, you know, even it out.
Possibly. Possibly.
And nutmeg. Isn't nutmeg good for the stomach?
I would have to do the research on that.
Or is it ginger?
It's ginger.
Ginger.
It's ginger. Yeah. Ginger is very good for the stomach, and it's calming. Well, remember when in our day, someone had an upset stomach, they would get you ginger ale.
Yeah, I do remember that.
Right. Remember, that was always the big thing. Well, ginger, and, you know, during this season, too, and I have a jar that's probably 5 years old. They sell, in the most spice areas, they sell candied ginger. It's in a jar. They're little teeny bites, and two or three bites of that is enough to, at least for me, kind of settle an upset stomach.
Well, and also at Christmas, you know, you have the candy cane, which is a good sedative, but you could also have the gingerbread man or the gingerbread house.
Correct.
If you're so, there are a lot of good medical preventatives that you can set on your table.
Yes, yes, but again, with caution, that you don't want someone who, again, small children or something rather, grabbing a whole bunch of something, as children are wont to do during the season.
You know, something that's interesting that's come up with me over the last few years is people tend to want to sing at Christmas time. But when you're having a party, is there any rule when it comes to music? Because a lot of Christmas music is cultural, Santa Claus, trees, and all that. And then some is religious, Way in a Manger, Silent Night. But you know, you don't know what the makeup of your group is, possibly religiously. Is it a problem if you go into those, like the First Noel? I think the First Noel does not get done enough. I mean, I like Silent Night, I like Away in a Manger, but for a spiritual song, I like the First Noel, and they never seem to do that one.
No, I don't know why.
I don't know. I think that has that's a very meaningful song.
Yes, yes. And also, I'll tell you what I play is, you know, my father was Air Force, and we were stationed in Hawaii, 58 through 62. And my mother bought beautiful, beautiful records, which I still have a turntable, believe it or not. And it's the holiday season songs, but with a Hawaiian twist.
Oh,
yeah, it's a nice little change, and of course for me, see, it takes me back to being a child and being in Hawaii. Now, the one thing when we lived there too is must have been what 8, 9, 10, and I was like, "Well, Mother, it's 80 degrees out," and she said, "Honey, we live in Hawaii," because I had lived in the East Coast. I'd lived in Arlington, Virginia, where you know, and bundle up and you go outside and it's cool and you come back in and the house is nice and warm. And but so she would play that music, light a couple candles or do something, and it made it feel like Christmas.
That's interesting, because the other day I was having a conversation with somebody, because right here in Ohio, especially because of this whole baby it's cold outside thing, started in Cleveland. You know, there are certain songs, if you do dissect them, that people might not like. There's a lot of stories this week about the fourth grade teacher who was fired for telling the students there was no Santa Claus.
Oh.
Yeah, I know. So you got to be careful when you pick your music, and also know who's coming, because it does change the conversation.
Yeah, and that's, I think it's up to the family. If someone had asked me, I would say I think it's up to the family. That maybe they tell the children when they're young, maybe they wait till they're a little bit older, but I would leave that up to the family.
You know, it's interesting, because one of the things that goes hand in hand with Christmas is Christmas Eve services. And I know a lot of people who go to Christmas Eve parties, because usually there's not Christmas Day parties. The parties seem to happen on Christmas Eve. They're either trying to rush people out of their house so they can get to the 11 o'clock service, or the people, you know, they don't want to offend the person, but, you know, if you come at 7 and you're leaving at 10 to get to the service, you know, what should you say? Should you just say, I've got to go to the service, and that will offend nobody?
Well, it's, one, you're a guest in that person's home. So to say very politely, thank you for having us. We've enjoyed it, but we're going to go to the service. As simple as that.
What do you do with that family member who, or maybe a friend, who comes with another family member? And, you know, you really don't want them there.
Oh, geez.
Oh, yeah. I think about this because, you know, this is common.
It is. And it's Peggy Post is a dear friend of mine. You know, the great-granddaughter-in-law of Emily Post. And we talk about some of these things. And the bottom line is you want to be gracious. And you can button it up or suck it up for an hour or two. Don't start a brouhaha. You know, people talk about the Thanksgiving or Christmas dinner, and they're like, oh, my gosh, you know, Aunt So-and-so's coming or Uncle So-and-so's coming. And it's like, look, for an hour or two, you can be civil. That's all it takes.
You know what the problem, though, is? Here's what I've found. Because, like I said, the Christmas Eve thing happens at my house. And here's what I've noticed. Now, yeah, I could probably suck it up and not say anything, even though I find the person to be saying things that are inappropriate. But what happens is that one of the other guests, who doesn't know them well, hears this nasty comment that, you know, I don't know. And then you aren't there to explain that to them. And then you have a problem.
Yes, it can be very dicey. It truly can. But, or you simply say, my husband and I used to go, some friends would invite us, and the hostess would say, we are not talking politics.
Well, yeah, that sometimes can be a bad one. But, you know, we had a letter. I don't think we've ever discussed this. We had this letter come in. Oh, my goodness. We talk about it every holiday because we never have gotten the good answer. And it was all about, I think it was a female who was throwing a holiday party. Mm-hmm. And an aunt of this female had called up and said she wanted to come to the party, but she knew that her sister, the mother, had not spoken to her in years. Now, the dilemma that the letter came into us as is, how do I handle this? And there's never been a good answer.
Well, again, I would say, if you're the hostess or host, simply to say, we've invited you, and yes, Aunt so-and-so is coming. It's up to you, and it's your choice whether you want to come or not. We would love to have you here. And if necessary, you stay in the kitchen and she'll stay in the living room.
But you know where that falls apart. That's a logical answer. But where that falls apart is your mother's your mother. And chances are your mother was there for the first 18 Christmases. Mm-hmm. And your aunt was not. She wasn't there Christmas morning. And when you broach that with your mother, I think if that's two friends, that's a perfectly logical thing to do. But when it's your mother or your father or your grandparents,
it gets very touchy. But see, you know the background. Others may not know the real background. Who knows what happened 20 years ago that set them apart? But you can, and I hate to use the term referee, but, and I've seen it. I've been to people's homes that, again, friends of ours, and you can just see it, you know, Aunt so-and-so and Uncle so-and-so, and they start getting into it. And I looked at Marilyn, our friend, one day, and she said, oh, I just let them go.
Well, there you go.
There you go.
Here's a big one with our few remaining moments. If I haven't sent out my Christmas card yet, what do I do?
Well, if you haven't sent them out yet, you can still send them. They may arrive late, but the thought is there. that's one of the reasons I don't do holiday cards like that anymore. Everybody gets inundated. I usually do New Year's.
I didn't get a holiday card from you. I was just thinking about that.
I don't send them out. You know, but I do New Year's. And if I can't get around to it for New Year's, I bump it to Valentine's Day.
You know why this sits so poignantly with me is that for years, I had a good friendship with Phyllis Diller. And Phyllis sent the best Christmas cards.
Yes.
Now, this list, were you on her list?
Well, my mother and Phyllis Diller were friends.
Yeah.
And they got along so well. And I met her once or twice. And she was a fabulous, fabulous woman. And people don't realize, you probably do if you knew her, you know, she I don't want to say a concert pianist, but she played the piano phenomenally.
Well, that's, see, the Christmas card thing, it didn't have to do with the piano, but she was also a tremendous artist.
Yes.
So at Christmas, what you would get is the front of the card would be something Phyllis had drawn, which was always, her art sold in galleries.
Yes.
And then on the inside would be a Phyllis Diller holiday joke. And then she personally signed everything. She lived to be 95, and God bless her. I think our count when she passed away, I think she was on this show something like 70 times, and she did her last interview with us a month before she died. But the Christmas card thing was always important because I thought she kept up with that.
Yes.
And through her 95 years, that list had to be enormous.
And that's the kind of card that's a keeper.
Yes, and I do. I've kept her cards.
You probably do. Now, I'll tell you a really funny one that I mothered the original Heloise, and Phyllis were about the same size, 5'2 and something or other. And my mother bragged one time. She goes, "Well, my thighs are a quarter inch bigger than Phyllis's." I'm like, "What?" Because I would tease my mother, and remember, Phyllis had chicken legs.
Yeah.
And I was like, "What?" She was, "Well, mine are a quarter inch bigger." I was like, "Okay." But those sometimes are the fond memories that are wacky at the time, but later on. So even during the holiday season, you know, with Christmas and New Year's and Hanukkah and all of that, is what I've always said when I do my speeches, it's you're making memories. If the pie doesn't turn out or the cake fails or falls or something or other, 20 years from now, nobody's going to remember that.
No.
But they're going to remember seeing your aunt and uncle reminiscing. They're going to remember singing carols. So you're making memories.
I think that's true. And I think sometimes... this will be a nice Christmas moment. I think sometimes at the end, if you have that party guest that is unsalvageable, when you throw them out, people remember that years from now. When they say, "Remember when she got so obnoxious, you had to just boot her out the door on Christmas Eve." And that becomes a happy memory.
Well, I'm not sure about happy memory on that one, but... And as another hint... You know, I used to have huge open houses during the holiday season. Big. I mean, 80, 100 people. And I would always set the time on the invitation from, say, like 2 to 5, 3 to 6. And then at the 6 o'clock, suddenly you just don't boot everybody out, but it kind of, they start leaving and leaving, and then if you get one or two people leaving, the other people are like, "Oh, okay, okay." So just being gracious, you can tough it out for a short while, and they do make good memories.
They do. Heloise, it's such a pleasure to catch up with you at the holiday season or any time of year, and I cannot wait for our next visit. I hope you have the most wonderful holiday season with your family.
Well, Melik Kalikimaka.
The one and only Heloise. Thank you.
Take care.
Be back with Pat Carroll in 10 minutes.
He was chubby and plump, a right jolly old elf. And I laughed when I saw him in spite of myself. A wink of his eye, a twist of his head,